Everybody? For those of you that were here this morning, this feels like part two as far as I'm concerned. Dave's sermon this morning spoke really into my heart, and hopefully you'll understand a bit more as I go on how it all fits together. We're continuing to look at how God works in both the miraculous and in the mundane. And today I want to start to look at the life of Abraham. Abraham's the father of faith, isn't he? He's one of the central characters in the Bible. He's referred to not only, you know, in the book of Genesis, and there we find his story in some detail between chapters 12 and 25, but he's referred to throughout the New Testament as well, particularly in Paul's letters to Galatians and to the Romans, and also in the book of Hebrews. Abraham, we're told, is the father of all who believe. He's our example in matters of living by faith. And therefore, there's a lot we can learn from him, both what we should do and what we shouldn't. One of the reasons I think Abraham is such a help to us in our journey of faith is that he lived a long and full life. He died at the age of 175. And so we see faith lived out to the full in all the highs and lows of everyday life. And the biblical story is inevitably selective, but we do see what it means to walk with God on a daily basis. We see how both the miraculous and the mundane are woven together to what is sometimes called, you know, life's rich pageant. And it seems that we can't really live without both sides of that coin, the miraculous and the mundane. Abraham certainly illustrates what it means to live with the miraculous. You know, he's called the father of all nations when he and Sarah, his wife, were old and they couldn't actually have a baby. So that is obviously evidence of the miraculous. But he also shows us how this coexists with the ordinary and the everyday. And I think one of the basic truths of the Christian life is that God is at the heart of everything, and God takes the initiative with people. He was the one who created the heavens and the earth, we've said. He took the initiative in speaking our universe into being. Humanity exists because God made us. You know, it's a very basic and fundamental truth that God both starts and completes every work that he undertakes. Jesus is known as the first and the last, the Alpha and the Omega. He's also known as the pioneer and the perfecter of faith. We live in a God-centered world, and if we fail to understand that God is the one who starts every journey of faith by his miraculous intervention in our world, we'll always end up missing out on the miraculous because we wrongly assume that everything starts and ends with us. And you know, children struggle with that idea, don't they? They look at family photographs that were taken before they were born and they wonder where they are. You know, why wasn't I in this photograph? Why am I missing? Because they can't imagine a world without them. But when we understand that we're part of God's story, but we're not the whole story, then we can live with purpose and we can live with a humble understanding of our worth. We are important to God, but he is so much greater and more powerful than we are. Eugene Peterson says that the Bible makes it clear that every time there's a story of faith, it's completely original. God's creative genius is endless. He never, fatigued and unable to maintain the rigors of creativity, resorts to mass-producing copies. Each life is a fresh canvas on which he uses lines and colors, shades and lights, textures and proportions that he's never used before. We see what is possible. Anyone and everyone is able to live a zestful life that spills out of the stereotype containers that a sin-inhibited society provides. Such lives fuse spontaneity and purpose and green the desiccated landscapes with meaning. And we see how it is possible by plunging into a life of faith, participating in what God initiates in each life, exploring what God is doing in such events. And I like that phrase, you know, we participate in what God initiates in each life. We are co-workers in God's service. As we said with Noah, you know, the truly miraculous part of life is that God invites us into partnership and into service with him. We're not meant to live life on our own, doing things our way, just being wholly responsible for everything. That's a burden that's too heavy for us to bear. We can't really carry the weight of the world on our shoulders. Life is primarily about our response to God. You know, prayer is never the first word, it's always the second word, because God always has that first word. And, you know, life is really about getting in on what God's doing, about responding to God's actions and believing him when he speaks. Because just as with Noah, Abraham's story starts with God speaking to him. We don't know anything about Abraham's life before this, and he was 75 years old when we first meet him in the Bible, so clearly he'd done a lot of living, you know, before that point. But we don't even really know when God spoke to him, how many years before perhaps he actually set out on the journey. But it's clear that that conversation became the spur to everything that he subsequently did. And we read about this in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 to 3. The Lord had said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you I will curse, and all people on earth will be blessed through you." So God speaking to him ultimately became the pivot of everything that Abraham subsequently did in his life. And in these chapters in Genesis, you know, really, if you look at them, they're really an account of the conversations that God had with Abraham and what he did as a result of those conversations. They became those pivotal point incidents that Mark Bergin used to talk about, those moments when God speaks into our lives and changes everything. You know, that conversation in Genesis 12 became the starting point to him leaving his home in Haran, setting out to this unknown destination, based solely on the fact that God had spoken to him. It says in verses 4 to 5, "So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there." You know, it must have taken such faith to uproot his family from their familiar, comfortable, quite rich, it seems, lives. You know, it seems they'd accumulated quite a lot of possessions and people in those years. And they were setting off on this journey to a place I will show you. You know, if I'd have been his wife at that point, I'd have been asking a lot of questions. You know, where exactly? Where are we going, God? If you're going to show us, why can't you do that now, please? You know, we often want the answers to questions like that before we set off. We want that blueprint from God. But all he seems to give us is that, you know, initial architect's impression, you know, this vague picture that doesn't really tell us very much at all. Hebrews 11 verse 8 makes it plain just how big a step of faith this was. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going. I can remember sitting in this building in January 2013, listening to a sermon from Stephen Bergin from Luke 9, when Jesus sent out his disciples. And God spoke to me through verse 2, "Take nothing for the journey, no staff, no bag, no bread, no money, no extra shirt." I didn't really understand what God was saying at that point, but I knew that he was telling me to set off on another journey with him, one that would lead me to leave the job that I loved, that God had provided for me in the school where I was teaching. And at that point, you know, Mark Bergin was the pastor here. I thought he'd be here forever. You know, I had to take the step of talking first of all to Gary about what I felt God had said to me, talking to my boss at work, saying that I felt that God was telling me I was going to leave the school. And I was probably more shocked by the fact that they seemed to accept what I was saying than I was by God speaking. And it was scary at this point because I knew I was being called to give up something, but I had no idea at all what I was being called to. So I identify very much with Abram at this point, you know, setting off on a journey, knowing that he had to leave all that they'd acquired and accumulated in Haran, but not knowing where he was going. It's not a comfortable thing to have God speak to us. You know, there's the promise of blessing in these words. You know, all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. But there's also a lot of uncertainty and doubt and questions when God speaks to us. We don't have all the answers to our questions. We don't have all the answers to other people's questions. We just know that God has spoken, and that speaking revolutionizes our lives. And this was to happen time and time again in Abraham's life. Every time the promise is expanded and clarified, it's because God speaks with Abraham. From the general promise of blessing comes that specific promise to give him a son and an heir in Genesis 15. And from the conversation requesting confirmation that Abraham will take possession of this land comes a new covenant that's enacted by God, when God speaks prophetically into his life about the future of his people. God speaks with Abraham on numerous occasions. He confirms his promise, he enlarges upon it, he gives more clarification. Genesis chapter 17, for example. He speaks with Abraham revealing his plans for Sodom. And it's because of that that Lot and his family are spared, because Abraham learns to plead with God for their rescue. He speaks about the problems that Abraham and Sarah face because of their refusal to wait for God and the birth of Isaac. And he tests Abraham by asking him to give up his promised son, Isaac. And from that conversation comes this revelation that God is the provider, Jehovah Jireh. You know, every time that we see Abraham growing and developing in faith, it's because God has spoken to him. The mistakes he makes are when he comes up with his own plans or when he doesn't listen to God. So God speaking to us is that miracle that leads to the miraculous in our everyday lives. His words, the same words that speak the world into being, are words that have the power to change us. You know, Jesus is the word who speaks to us as a good shepherd. In these last days, it tells us in Hebrews, he has spoken to us by his Son. And when God speaks to us, we can never be the same. But at the same time, we see from Abraham's life, and from our own too, that whilst God speaking is the catalyst for change, we need faith to make those promises true. You know, I can tell you many occasions when God's spoken directly into my life, words which I know that have not come from my own imagination. But I can also say that that didn't usually lead to instantaneous miracles. There was often a time of testing, a time when I had to do what God said, no matter how things looked. And there are also times of waiting, as Dave was saying this morning, when literally nothing seems to be happening. You know, Abraham was 75 when he set out from Haran. Isaac, the miracle baby, wasn't born until Abraham was 100. Even when God spoke to him specifically, changing his name from Abram, exalted father, to Abraham, father of many nations, there's another year to wait before they could actually hold that baby boy in their arms and laugh with that, you know, astonished relief that comes from seeing God work directly in your life. Then there was that terrible moment years later when God said, take your son, your only son whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah and sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you. You know, we see perhaps more clearly in Abraham's life than anybody else's that God speaking to you doesn't lead to an easy life. Yeah? A life of faith will always have its challenges and its trials and its tests. But God wants to stretch our faith so that we not only hear about the miraculous, but we see it in our own lives. And Paul focuses on that aspect of Abraham's life, you know, when he talks about his faith response to God in Romans 4. He says, Abraham believed God and it was credited to him as righteousness. He says, against all hope, Abraham in hope believed, and so he became the father of many nations, just as it had been said to him, so shall your offspring be. Without weakening in his faith, he faced the fact that his body was as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, and that Sarah's womb was also dead. Yet he did not waver through unbelief regarding the promise of God, but was strengthened in his faith and gave glory to God, being fully persuaded that God had power to do what he had promised. And I think that gives us the insight into the faith that held Abraham upright, even in those long years of uncertainty and waiting. You know, he didn't deny the reality of the impossibility of his situation. You know, he knew that he was old. He knew that his wife was barren. But he saw beyond the natural. He understood that the fulfillment of God's promise depends entirely on trusting God in his way and then simply embracing him and what he does. God's promise arrives as pure gift. When everything was hopeless, the Message version says, Abraham believed anyway, deciding to live not on the basis of what he saw he couldn't do, but on the basis of what God said he would do. You know, God does the miraculous. We don't. We can't. Our response is to believe that God will do what he has said he will do, and that we then have to leave the results to him. And that's easier said than done, especially when you are in that period of waiting. You know, I spoke earlier about God speaking to me about leaving my job to set forth on this new journey, this new chapter, in January 2013. It took from January until March to work through that really meant handing a letter of resignation in. And then I thought, well, that's it, you know. I expect to leave the school at the end of the academic year in July. The only problem, as far as I was concerned, was that when they advertised my job, nobody applied for it. And that left me in a dilemma, because I was sure that God had spoken, but I still felt a responsibility to the pupils under my care. Every other teacher who was leaving, you know, they left at the end of July. I spent the 6 weeks holiday in miserable confusion, you know, preparing for a new academic year as if I were going to be staying there, but being sure in my heart that I shouldn't. And on the 29th of August 2013, the last Thursday of the school holidays, I was there in the building, battling the photocopier again, with tears in my eyes and headphones on so that I could listen to Christian songs as the only way of keeping myself sane, when one of the school leaders walked in with a native French speaker who was also the wife of an Ealing pastor, who just happened to get married on the same day that Gary and I did, and said, I think we've found the answer to your prayers. And Florentine was indeed appointed to my job in September. So although I stayed on another half term, longer than I certainly intended, by the end of the year, not only had I left my job, but Mark had resigned as pastor here. And at the start of 2014, Gary and I took over that role here. So when God speaks, miracles happen. But we have to believe what he says through the periods of doubt and uncertainty, through the trials and temptations, through our mistakes and failures. You know, Abraham made a lot of mistakes in those 25 years of waiting. Sometimes he made the same mistake twice, it seems, you know, when he was telling everybody that Sarah wasn't his wife. But he's still known as the father of faith because he kept on believing. And waiting for God is probably the most mundane thing that we ever do. And we're not told very much at all about what Abraham did between that first call and the birth of Isaac. But he certainly wasn't sat around doing nothing. What he was doing was just the ordinary stuff of life. Genesis 13 verse 2 says he'd become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. So in other words, he was going about his ordinary everyday life as a businessman, as a trader. He spent time travelling, tells us in verse 3 of Genesis 13, from the Negev he went from place to place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai where his tent had been earlier. Sometimes he had to work hard to keep his family safe. There were battles against enemies, We read about one of those in Genesis chapter 14. On other occasions, he lied about his relationship with Sarah to avoid trouble with other rulers. So the picture that we see of Abraham in those 25 years isn't one of miracle after miracle every day. There's plenty of ordinary stuff in there too, including the frustration and the fear that arose from not seeing God move. That resulted in Abraham agreeing to Sarah's plan to have a son through her servant, Hagar. And that episode happened when Abraham was 86. So he'd been waiting 11 years, yeah, from the start of his journey. And so we can see why it happened. You know, 11 years is a long time to wait for this son and heir. But it was actually going to be another 14 years before God would fulfill his promise and give Abraham the son that he longed for. You know, I think much of the time between God speaking to him and the fulfillment of his promise, Abraham would have felt there was plenty of mundane going on in his life. You know, even when we've heard God speaking to us, that doesn't eliminate the need for faithfulness and perseverance and hard work and, dare I say it, you know, monotony. Every single person that we hail as a hero of the faith saw God move in miraculous ways in their lives. We can see this too. But every single person hailed as a hero in the Bible, you know, they know as much about the mundane and the everyday as they do about the miraculous. What did I do between the 13th of January 2013 and our induction service as leaders here on 4th of January 2014? Well, most of the time I just went about my ordinary life, working, preaching, volunteering. There was very little during that period that could be classed as miraculous. You know, faith was mingled with doubt. There were days when I felt that I must have got it all wrong. There were days when I would cry tears of confusion and bewilderment. Some days I would feel positive and hopeful. Others I would feel resentful and afraid. But most of this time was ordinary, infused with reminders to wait patiently for God. And Dave preached a sermon during that time, which he almost preached again this morning in some ways, from Habakkuk chapter 2, where it says in verse 3, "Though this revelation linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay." And those words became like a lifeline to me that I had to wait. It was like an umbilical cord, in a way, keeping me tethered to God. I find it hugely significant that Dave actually spoke from that verse this morning. As far as I'm aware, I don't think he's spoken on it between those two dates. But they were, you know, important words to me to hold on in the waiting. And a song that I found very helpful when we're in the season of the mundane, when we're waiting for God, is called "While I'm Waiting" by John Waller. And the reason that I find it helpful is it highlights what actually happens in that time scale between God speaking to us and us seeing him do what he's promised. It says, "While I'm waiting, I will serve you. While I'm waiting, I will worship. While I'm waiting, I will not faint. I'll be running the race even while I wait." You know, and if you're in the season of the mundane now, when you wonder whether you'll ever see miracles happen again, you're called to serve God, to worship God, to keep on running the race and not give up. Your behaviour and your attitudes and your reactions are really important at this time. How you wait may well determine how long you have to wait. You know, the sooner you can surrender your impatience, your hopes, your fears, your doubts and your worries to God and rest in him, the better it will be for you. Psalm 27 verse 14 says, "Wait for the Lord, be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord." You know, waiting and hoping are often connected in the Bible. Hoping isn't just that shrug of the shoulders that it'll be all right in the end. It's a willingness to let God do it his way and in his time. It's trusting in God. And it means that we can know it's well, even if we've got no visible evidence of that fact. You know, the writer to the Hebrews gives us a conclusion to the life of Abraham when he comments on Genesis 22, that moment when God called Abraham to sacrifice his son. It says in verse 19, Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead. And so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death. You know, it seems that a life of God speaking to him, a visible miracle in the person of his son Isaac, made it easier for Abraham to believe for the miraculous. Because this time he doesn't hesitate to obey God. Yeah, it says, early the next morning, Abraham got up, loaded his donkey, he took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. There's faith in how he speaks to his servants. He says, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship and then we will come back to you. When Isaac questioned him about the whereabouts of the lamb, he said, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. In all of this, Abraham's learnt to trust God to do the miraculous. His job is simply to do what God tells him to do. And that's the lesson that we must learn too. You know, the mundane may make up the majority of our lives, but if we will do what God tells us to do, if we'll listen to the voice of the Lord and obey it, then we too will see the miraculous in our everyday lives. Yeah.